This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. The New York City Marathon is this Sunday, and the 2009 champion is in town to celebrate this amazing race. 2004 Olympic silver medalist Meb Keflezighi won't be running in this year's NYC Marathon after competing in Rio this summer and becoming the oldest man to run the Olympic Marathon at 41 years of age. Meb's story is a powerful one. Let's head to New York City now and meet this legendary runner on Sports Jam. First of all, thanks for joining us on Sports Jam, man.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for having me.
So I know you've had a busy day here today. You're at Hunter Public Relations in New York City, and you're talking to a lot of people. The New York City Marathon, now we know you're not running in it this year, but obviously in 2009 has to bring back some wonderful memories. What are those memories of winning the marathon in 2009?
Oh, to win the New York City Marathon in 2009 was my dream come true, because I did my first marathon, which is New York City Marathon 2002, and I learned my PhD because I went out really fast and I hit the wall and basically crawled in, and I never want to do it ever again. But, you know, you learn from your mistakes and adapt to new things, and so to be able to come back in 2009 and winning it, it was huge, and especially wearing that USA jersey, just pointing at it with pride and chanting USA, USA, it was a very meaningful victory.
We're going to talk about your fabulous career, but you mentioned something that all people, whether they run or not, like myself, you can see I'm not a marathon runner, hitting the wall. Tell us about what it means to hit the wall and to push through and then grab a victory, whether it be at the New York City Marathon or the Boston Marathon in 2014.
So hitting the wall is something that is imaginary there, because your mind says go, but your body says no way. And at that point, you have in the body and the mind has to meet up and kind of settle maybe for 15th place, whatever it might be. But you learn from your mistakes and train harder and smarter and stronger to be able to make that wall maybe go to 25 instead of mile 21. And over the years, I have discovered that what works for me, and to be able to just train through and, you know, all the small things that add up, whether it's icing, drills, nutrition, add up to be big things. And to be able to pull the victory in New York City Marathon or the Boston Marathon is amazing, just because every athlete's dream is that, or to make an Olympic team. And once you make those Olympic team or you participate in New York and Boston, it's like, oh, can I do better? Especially when you finish second and third and New York, you're like, well, can I get that victory? And to be able to come that victory after my pelvic stress fracture injury in November of 2007, and I thought my Olympic dream was over because I didn't make the team, and I was having family. People thought my career was over, but you persevere. That's what runners do, and be able to overcome those adversities. And I did a year and a half of therapy, and I couldn't wait 4 years for the next Olympics. So I made my New York City Marathon as my personal Olympics, and to be able to win that and to have the silver medalist there and the four-time Boston champion there, it gave a lot of credibility and a lot of meaningful for me to be able to pull the victory.
Before we talk about some of your other races, tell us why you're here during this New York City Marathon. I know you're going to be getting an award. Tell us about it and what it means to you.
Oh, it's great to be back in New York here. I just received the Greta Weitz Award this morning, lunchtime, and I'm here as a grand marshal, and I'm here for sponsors like Power Bar. We're going to be at the finish line of the marathon, handing out a new Power Bar product, clean whey protein bars, and be able to just, because as you race, it's not all just the race and get it over, but the recovery of it. So with those bars, there's 20 grams of protein and 2% of sugar. So before you start celebrating big time at night, you need to have right after the finish line great products.
Power Bar and eating and nutrition, we'll talk about that as well. I want to go back before we go forward. I want to give you a date of October 21st, 1987. Tell our listeners why that's so special to you.
October 21st, 1987, 29 years ago, I came to the United States with my parents and six siblings, and it's a dream that my parents want for their kids, because, you know, coming from war-torn Eritrea that lasted for 30 years, and we didn't have education opportunities. We didn't know what tomorrow was going to bring, or the future. You know, I'm the third oldest of my family, and two of my oldest brothers were 12 years old, and if the soldiers come and surround the village, and if you look old enough to hold a gun, they will take you. So my dad has to walk 225 miles to save his life, and leaving behind six kids and a wife. But through my mom's tenacity in Eritrea and my dad's perseverance and courage in Sudan and Italy, we reunited after 5 years. But in Italy, there was freedom, but the opportunity for us children was in the United States. So we came in October 21st, 1987, and that's why it's meaningful, because we came here with nothing, just the clothes on our back and not even the language, but we were trying to take advantage of the new opportunities. And I remember my dad waking us up at 4:30 in the morning to learn English through the dictionary before we went to 7:30 class. Basically what my parents told us is we have this you have this opportunity that we didn't have. Your uncles don't have, your cousins don't have, don't waste it. And we took it to heart, and we started working hard, and we wanted to get, they expected A in the classes, whether it was math class or PE class or science. Obviously a year after I came to the United States, I ran a physical education class in seventh grade, and the teacher said, if you work hard, you're going to get A or B. If you mess around and goof around, you get DRF, and you get a cool t-shirt that says Roosevelt, my club t-shirt, and I wanted to get that A, and I ran as hard as I can, and I ran a 520 mile, and that's when my God-given was talent was discovered. And he goes, you're going to go to the Olympics. But growing up without electricity and not seen television, I don't know what the Olympics were, but he was right on mark.
And his name is Dick Lord, right?
Absolutely. Coach Dick Lord was my PE teacher in seventh grade. I'm still in touch with him. He's 78 years old. And in fact, he was interviewed before the Rio Olympics on CBS. So he's the one that said, you're going to go to the Olympics. And I didn't know what that meant, to be honest. I have to go ask my dad what that meant. And I just was concerned, make sure I got an A in the class.
You know, it's fascinating to me, this beautiful view that we have here from the Hunter Public Relations Office. You're in a wonderful suit. You look great. You look a heck of a lot better than I, but you're younger than me. Maybe I have 13 years on you. Maybe that's why I don't look quite as good. I don't really think so. But when you think about a time period where I've heard you talk about you physically had to eat dirt to survive because there just wasn't any food. And now you're representing Power Bar, you're in an office like this. What goes through your mind? Did you ever think that this could possibly turn out this way for you when you were back a young child?
Absolutely not. You know, growing up in Eritrea where I was sometimes so hungry that I have to dig deep in the dirt until it's moisture enough to chew it and eat it. And that was just the mind telling you need some nutrition. Minerals. But no, I never imagined I would be where I am. And to put in perspective, like as you describe it, you know, you come to New York City Marathon on first class and having car service pick you up, and never my wildest dream that I ever dreamed. But I'm grateful for that, and I'm very appreciative of that. And I feel that any parents would give anything for their kids, and that's what our parents did. And you might know about myself in terms of athletic accolades, but equally, my brothers and sisters have worked hard to be a positive contributors to our country. And, you know, we have 9 out of 10 all have gone to college and graduated college and tried to do the best they can in their profession. I just happened to be running and, participating in the Olympics and winning New York and Boston. But those have changed my life from seventh grade PE class to running 26.2 miles, which I don't know how far that was at the time. But through hard work and perseverance, and the United States, land of opportunity, can provide, if you work hard, can take advantage of the opportunities that are, can lead you to great things, but never did I ever dream of those. And my wife, the same thing, Jordanos, and her upbringing, sometimes we have to pinch ourselves, you know, to describe what you describe, or to live in the neighborhood we live, or to have the things that we have is through mercy of God that we will be able to enjoy, because we could be the ones, my cousins back in Eritrea, who unfortunately don't have a lot, but at the same time, there's a lot of people that have immigrated here and then don't have the success that we have. But at the same time, my family and I are illustrated as a classic American dream, because, you know, our parents taught us the discipline, the hard work and the perseverance to be the best that we individually can be.
Are you tough on your daughters when you walk them to school, knowing that they know your background? They can't be slackers, right?
both my wife and I are not easy in our kids, to be honest, because we know what it means to not have anything. And they have everything and anything they need to be the best they can be. And we want them to take a full advantage of it. We don't want them to be spoiled or rotten. We try to spoil them here and there once in a while. But we want them to appreciate what they have. And, you know, sometimes my wife and I walk them to school and, you know, how often do the parents get to do that? Or we pick them up from school. So that's the norm for them, though. You know, they don't think like they've never been to a babysitting office or babysitting in their life, just because one of us has to be there and try to help each other and encourage each other. But they expected that in many ways. And sometimes I have to kind of, you know, don't make it so, not obvious, but don't make it so hard on them, because just because we have it hard, it shouldn't be hard on them. But at the same time, we try to make them appreciate what they have.
You live in San Diego, which I happen to think is heaven. So if you ever want to switch and come here, we'll switch places. That will be fine with me. You're used to the West Coast, a four-time NCAA champion at UCLA. What did you learn in college? That had to be an interesting transition for you to really become an adult at that time. How did it mold you, college?
College was a very interesting time for me. I was more focused on academics, because back in my head I was thinking what our parents want us to do. Education came first, and for me, I don't want to be as another athlete who never made it through the college. So for me, I took academics seriously, and staying. My teammates always checked the study lounge before they went to my room, because they know where to find me. And whether it was for dinner, whether it's for go for a run, they always checked the study lounge, because that's where I'll be first. And it molded me to be the person that I am, but I had a great mentor like Bob Larson, who was my coach there, and be able to mold me to who I am, professors and teachers and classmates and teammates, even though it wasn't easy for me at school, because I have to study extra hard than probably most of the students there, because English is not my first language. But, you know, taught me about hard work, perseverance, and for me, running came easy, but academic came first, and that's what my parents expected, that's what Coach Larson expected, and, you know, and it goes hand in hand with the other, because you have to do a lot of time management, because I was on the road a lot in terms of traveling with cross country and track and indoor. So there was no off season like basketball or football. So I was always on the go, and I was very serious. I'm glad I got that diploma, but in terms of social life, I did not have much besides my teammates and cross country and track. Other than that, I didn't have that much of the college experience life. But I wouldn't trade for anything, because then I wouldn't have the four NCAA title that I got.
Well, I get the impression that whatever you were going to try, you were going to succeed at, because you had that motivation. Now, let's talk a little bit about the fact that once you graduated, you went on to this amazing career. But you've wanted to also pass along your knowledge. You've written books about what it is to be a runner. And what kind of advice would you have just for the average person who's running the New York City Marathon? Not someone who's going to compete to win it, but someone who just enjoys, and maybe they're running their first New York City Marathon. What should they do?
Well, I've been very fortunate to write two books, Run to Overcome, my autobiography, and Met for Mortals for a training book. But it's all about, I always say, run to win. It doesn't mean getting first place, but getting the best out of yourself. Whether you're male, female, depending on what age you're in, you're trying to get to that finish line, as we all are. And my advice to first-timers would be very patient. You want to get to that finish line, because you tell everybody you're going to New York, you're going to run the New York City Marathon, and come Monday or Tuesday, they're going to ask you how it went. And you want to tell them a good story that you finished and walk semi-normal, because after a marathon, we can't walk normal, really, and we shuffle. So hydration is important during the race, but also to be able to recover is important. And that's where I think the power bar, bar to be able to help you just get recovery, because the finish line of one race is the beginning of another, whether it's going to work or getting ready for the next race. So with the protein, it's very important to recover in your system. I'm not saying don't have wine or other drinks, but the first thing that should go into your system should be the protein.
You're listening to Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest is Meb Keflezighi, who won the New York City Marathon back in 2009, the Boston Marathon in 2014, and won the silver medal in the Athens Games in 2004. Let's head back now to New York City, where he'll be at the finish line for this year's New York City Marathon, representing Power Bar.
How many Power Bars have you had lately?
I love Power Bars. I've been a Power Bar user since I was at UCLA. It's not just because I endorse them, but I've been using them for a very long time, and I use them for recovery purposes and snacks. You know, sometimes you're on the runway of airplane, and you know, everybody's looking for something to eat, and I always have Power Bars on my backpack. And now, but with this new Clean Whey protein bar, is great because it's healthier, and has only 20 grams of protein, and then also 2 grams of sugar.
When people heard that you were going to do the marathon at 41 in Rio, most of us, like myself, are you crazy? But you knew you had it in you. So what kind of nutrition do you have to have that maybe was different from when you were younger?
So, you know, when I was at UCLA, you know, first one, Eritrea, I was so hungry that I ate dirt. Then when I went to UCLA, I was in the dorms. I could eat anything and everything and get away with it because I was still training hard. But as I got older, my weight, I have to weigh myself almost every day or 2-3 times a week to be able to just see what weight works for me. And so I have to be a lot more wheat, brown rice, more protein, less carbohydrate as I got older. And so nutrition is important because you are what you put in your system, and there's some snacks that you can have and fruits that you can have, grazed throughout the day, versus when I was at UCLA, I used to stuff as much of food as I can to my stomach, and it was not a good news. But at the same time, you learn from your mistakes, and as you get older, you have to modify, you know, your ability to lift, you have to modify the amount you eat also.
This could be one of the great wins in the history of the Boston Marathon.
Meb Keflezighi coming into this race, saying this year all 36,000 of us will run together to demonstrate the spirit of the marathon. We will have our individual motivations, but we will be unified under the Boston Strong umbrella. For the first time since 1983, we are going to see an American man win the Boston Marathon.
Ah! Unbelievable!
And any thoughts of anybody ever saying, Meb's not the first American to run this, he's from Africa? That all went out the window in the Boston Marathon, and I've heard you say people will now just say thank you to you. Is that okay? I mean, is that okay to have something like that give you at least some satisfaction? You knew all along that you were running for the USA through all these Olympics, winning the silver medal in Athens. It took to 2014 for some people to give you your due. What do you think about that?
You know, for me, it's just I try to be the best citizen that I can be every day of my life versus just once every 4 years like the Olympics. I try to be a positive example and a great role model for people to look up to. And people have come and told me, you're an inspiration. Thank you for what you're doing for the United States, U.S. distance running. But there's always that 1% or one of a million that says kind of focuses on where I was born. For a fact, I'm not born here. Let's look at my name, Abratum Keflezighi, or it's not your typical American name. But what does it mean to be an American? Is to be here and, you know, be able to be a positive contributor to society, and, you know, you pay your taxes, you enjoy the freedom and liberty that the United States provides. And I've been very fortunate to be able to do great things for the United States, including my siblings. And we try to be a positive contributors, but you know, people question that. I mean, not many people get questioned those things if they have different color of their skin. But I feel like I have to protect that. But, you know, it was after winning the New York City Marathon that rose that question. He's not American enough. Well, what is American for 100% was American 1%. I didn't know there was kind of such title, 1%, 2%, or 100%. But winning the Boston Marathon, you know, I was in the 2013 Boston, but due to injury, I didn't run the race. And I love watching my fellow runners compete and finish, and I don't have those opportunities because for media or for drug testing. But that day, I just said, you know, I'm going to go watch my fellow runners. It's a celebration. People never thought they could go around the block, and then they run a 5K, and then they run a 10K, and then they do a marathon. And then once they do a marathon, it's like, let me see if I can qualify for the Boston Marathon. So I enjoy those moments watching them across the finish line. I took about probably like 80 pictures, just people were celebrating. And obviously the horrific moment happened at the finish line. And I had left a grandstand where I was watching it 5-7 minutes prior to that because I had an appointment. And that afternoon, Bonnie Ford from ESPN asked me, am I going to come and support the race? I said, of course, I have to come and support. But I hope to be healthy enough to win the race. And that's what my intentions were, and people thought I was crazy maybe, but at the same time, every day since the bombing is like, can I do this for the runners? Can I do that on Pitcher's Day? When you see the Boston Strong slogan or when you see the B-hat and things like that, you think about, oh, I want to do. And then when the Red Sox want to put the trophy at the finish line, you have internal communication with yourself. It's like, can I do that for them? And you train hard, you persevere. And it wasn't my ideal training, but when that came, the day came, I had the victim's name on my bib just to draw inspiration and, you know, get to God give me the strength of their energy and, you know, wanted to do something positive on Boston Street. And, you know, going through the race, I just started keep digging. And I had a minute and 15 second lead and came down to 5 second lead. And it was dramatic finish. But at the same time, you just keep digging. And, you know, you want to represent your country to the best that you can. And for me, I feel like that 5:20, that my God-given talent was maximized at that Boston Marathon 2014 and to be the first American to win the Boston Marathon. And in front of, you know, paving the path for the 36,000 other participants in the race. So it has a lot of meaning to me.
And it actually meant more to you, I think, than the silver medal in 2004, right?
Almost definitely. The Boston victory is the most meaningful victory in my career. And more, you know, it's hard to say. New York was huge to be able to win it. Winning a silver medal for our country was huge. But on that day, the year after the bombing, to win the Boston Marathon, which was the only thing that was missing on my resume, that maybe it wasn't going to happen just because I was getting older. I was 2 weeks shy of my 39th birthday. People wrote me off. I had less than 1% chance of winning, and it was the deepest field ever. And to go and execute a good plan, in fact, I tell my mentor, Bob Larson, don't worry, you're not going to see me in the front until the last 5K, but we know what happened. After 5 miles into the race, I took the lead. Experience paid big dividend for me, and just, you know, doing it greater than yourself, having the bibs of the victims there and be able to just, you know, you want to be able to represent your country the best you can and, you know, just keep pushing and pushing. And, you know, I have to throw a 4:30 mile, a mile 16 to get away from Joseph R. Boyd and then conquer the hills. But, you know, this is when, you know, when you, everybody's chanting USA, USA on the side of the road, you can't help it. You get motion gets into you. I'll start chanting with them and just keep pushing and pushing. And when you push your body to the body so much that a lot of bad things happen, you start having issues with your feet, you start having maybe throwing up, but, you know, you're in the lead, you want to be able to represent your country the best you can. So that's why it's the most meaningful victory of my career.
What's been the most meaningful thing that one of your daughters has said to you?
You know, so my daughters, my middle one, Fiore, always says, you know, you tell your kids not to say hi to strangers, right? But you're walking down the street, and I think I'm a friendly person, and people say, hey, Meb, thanks for what you do for our country. Thank you for winning the Boston Marathon. And she always says, do you know that person? I said, no. It's like, but you say don't say hi to strangers. How do they know you? And you have to explain, educate to them. I was in the Olympics. I won the Boston Marathon. I won the New York City Marathon. And for them, you know, they're the daughter of an Olympian, of a Boston champion, a New York City champion. I think they just want to be I want to be a daddy for them. And for them is more time with them because I travel a lot. And my wife tried to understand that, you know, I am traveling, impacting people's life, and you hear amazing stories when you are in line for an hour and a half, people waiting for you. They said they're the last treatment, the last run before they start chemo. So you never know what that's going to come. Either that next person in line and says, you know, I started a marathon because of you. I watched you see New York in 2009. And I said, if you can do it, I don't have to win, but I can finish a marathon. So you hear those all those stories. And my daughters have the great appreciation that, I have touched people's life. And it says, well, we understand. They try to say, well, we understand, but, you know, we want you home more. So that's a little difficult to swallow.
They have great genes in them, and you're all about nutrition and fitness. Could we see one of your daughters competing in the New York City Marathon down the line?
You know, Fiore have said that she likes to run a marathon. Fiore is the 8-year-old. But nutrition, and my wife here does that, is a great job. Make sure we eat healthy as a, athlete's house, you have healthy snacks around the house. And I tell them to spoil themselves because, you know, sometimes I let them, you know, when I'm gone, enjoy yourself, whatever treats you want. But when I'm at the house, I like to have fruits and other things because if I see it, I'm going to go for it. And so they have to be disciplined, whether eating a lot of greens, a lot of fruits. Usually at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I usually have fruit time with my daughters and music and dancing and things like that. But, you know, they have the genetics to be good athletes because their mom was a runner in high school. I'm obviously a runner, but it has to come from the heart. They still like to run. They participate in soccer right now, but eventually, Sarah is 10 years old, the oldest one. Now it's time to make that transition to see if she can do a mile or 5K and things like that. But they definitely have the form, the tenacity, the drive, and I just hope they can keep it up.
Last question. Our last image of you doing push-ups at the finish line. Take us to that moment.
You know, Rio was an amazing experience in itself. For me to participate in the Olympics as a 41 years old, many people have come told me that I'm an inspiration to them because, you know, you represent the old guys or gals. But the competitive me wanted to do a lot more than what I finished. I took my award ceremony jacket and pants to be able to pack it because I really thought I had a slight chance of getting the medal. And the race can sometimes pan out the way you want it, anticipate, and other times it just goes down the drain. All the training, all the commitment, all the perseverance to get to the starting line healthy, and I was ready to do that. But for whatever reason, my stomach acted up, mile 13.3, and all I could think of is like, this hadn't been before, but usually a mile 24 or 25. But 13 miles, 13.3, that's only halfway. And, you know, we all know that marathon is a long way. And when you're having issues at 13.3, it's extremely, extremely long ways. And so I just said, you know what, I'm going to be mid top three, keep gaining ground, and then maybe top 10. And I stopped 7 times. And then there was an Australian guy in front of me. It was wet and slippery day. I couldn't catch him. And then the Irish guy came and passed me. And I said, okay, make sure I look back. I have enough space because I don't want to fight for every spot at the finish line and get me out of my comfort zone slip. But I slipped anyways, just a few yards, a few inches away from the finish line, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, are you kidding me? I've been trying to get that finish line for like 13 miles, struggling, and all I could do is drag myself to that finish line to my chest, and I did a couple push-ups just to let people know that I was okay.
And we loved it. If you can meet anybody that you haven't met and you can go back in time, who would it be and why?
You know, going to Rio, home of Pelé. I used to be nicknamed Pelé. I was a very good soccer player when I was in Italy, and then when I came to the United States, going to Brazil, he was the first athlete probably my dad told us about. And if I have that opportunity and chance, I would love to meet him just because I was hoping I'll make it to Brazil. I got a chance to meet him. I got to be able to make it happen, but he just feels like, you know, he's an icon in the sport, and he's been there for a long, long, long time. I do have the great honor of meeting many, many basketball, football players in the United States, but soccer was my first passion. I would love to meet Pelé if I could.
It's been an honor to have you on Sports Jam, Meg. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Doug, for having me. Appreciate it.
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcasts by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes. Special thanks going out this week to Cassie Galassetti for helping us hook up
with Meb Keflezighi in New York City. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.